Well, hello everybody, and welcome. Welcome to the Words, Women and Wisdom show. So this is popping up on BBS Radio, streaming live from California, and also popping up on the new podcasting platform, a socially interactive podcast called Podopolo. And I'm delighted today to be joined by a colleague of mine, who I'll introduce formally in just a moment, Liz Nichols. Hello, Liz.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. So I'm sitting here based in sunny Calgary, and you are out in the Vancouver area, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right downtown. Yeah. Okay.
So this is live streaming from Canada today. Woohoo! So if you haven't tuned in before to the show, this is a show which is all about rising, interviewing women who have risen from some sort of tragedy to triumph. It's about being inspiring and showcasing incredible women who are living through something and now taking that important learning and their message out to the masses. The bigger the dream, the more fun we have on this interview. And if you haven't connected with me before, I'm your host, Yvonne E.L. Silva. My purpose is uplifting the spirit of humanity, which sounds like a pretty big job. And so putting these radio interviews together and podcasts and sharing information in this format, as well as my best-selling book, my events, my coaching work and mentoring work, all comes together under the umbrella of Women and Wisdom Media. So I work with high-achieving women, teaching them to flourish in business. A lot of times it's by including a mission-inspired element in their business and also helping them to move from that uncertainty and doubt into solidifying their sales mastery, having confident conversations, which is actually the title of my best-selling book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. So together with those concepts, I'm bringing forth experiences from over the past 30 years of success in business in 8 startups, and also working with a variety of different kinds of women, particularly though those who are entrepreneurs, already successful, love working in mission-inspired businesses. So Liz is joining me today, and I'm delighted that she could join me quickly today, because Liz is also a colleague of mine. She's a professional certified coach as well, but in a different area. So Liz has a wealth of experience, a wealth of knowledge to share. She is somebody that I have come to know over the past few months. She is seasoned working with a very specific field. And rather than me sharing her story, I'm going to let her share her story. And suffice to say, if you have ever wondered what it's like to either grow up with a learning disability, or as in my case, to live with someone who has the issue with special needs of having epilepsy, you want to pay close attention. And even if you don't know anybody right now, understanding and hearing the message today, I think will make you a little bit more empathetic when you see these things happening around you. So Liz, I'm so glad that you could join me today. I'm going to take these off now. I don't need them.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. So, hi, everyone. It's Liz. My name is Liz Nichols. So basically, growing up and being in elementary school, the teachers would contact my parents and they were concerned because in class, I would stare off into space. I couldn't concentrate. And my marks weren't really good. And so, of course, with having all that, you don't feel that great because, you know, the teachers are concerned, your parents are concerned, nobody knows what's going on. So fast forward a bit to, I was around 21, I had a great job, I'd been through college, I traveled through Europe, studied in Europe, I'd lived in Banff, I'd been to technical school, I had my own place, a good job, a car, life was amazing. But you know, I just didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I wasn't really quite sure the direction of my life. Now, having said that, out of the blue, no warning, no nothing, I had a full-on grand mal epileptic seizure, like the worst of the worst, growling and foaming at the mouth and the eyes rolling. I can only imagine how scary that was for the people that witnessed it. That put me into years and years and years of specialists and doctors and in and out of hospital and tests and medications and, funnily enough, but I was studying during all that time. And once I was on all the medications for epilepsy, I was zooming through technical school, straight A's, and taking this course and that course and excelling in my studies, which was just incredible. When you think back to an elementary school and school, all the way through school, just wasn't getting above that B. And if it was rare to get an A, but a lot of C's and D's. And I think I knew internally that I was smarter than that, but something was holding me back. So I had the grand mal seizure, and words cannot express the devastation it brought. And the years and years and years of, feeling ashamed of it and taking all these medications and having seizures and losing jobs and losing your driver's license numerous times and having to take time off work. And it just went on and on and on and on. And the side effects of all the medications were horrific. Mm. Horrific. And I took up to 5 a day. So through all that, you felt different and you felt ashamed and you didn't feel like you were good enough, and you battled depression, you battled anxiety. Oh my gosh, I could just go on and on and on and on. So around the age of 38, I had made a decision not to have children because I had the epilepsy, and I didn't want to do that. And then a couple of years later, we thought, you know what, let's look into this. So I went in to have some testing, and they said, there's no signs of your epilepsy, and you're 38, 39 years old. And I'm like, what? And they said there was no signs 2 years ago. Meanwhile, I had had a tutelization so that I didn't have children because I don't want to be an epileptic mother. Anyway, during that crazy time, something must have happened where I went into early menopause and the epilepsy was disappearing. And they said, you have a clean bill of health. Well, I misinterpreted clean bill of health. I thought that meant, hey, I'm special. It disappeared. It's gone away. Anyway, it doesn't necessarily mean that. So I spent many years coming off the medications and continuing on with life. But, I had lived in victim mode for quite a while and in real uncertainty and not knowing what my purpose was, where I was meant to go, what I was meant to do. It was sort of a real scramble, moving forward. And so at about 50, 55, I decided I needed to fix myself and find myself. So I signed up to a coaching course. And I'd always kind of tried to rise above the victim mode and go more to the victor. And that was a struggle. And always tried to go get away from the depression, anxiety, and sort of go more positive. But I signed up to a coaching school, and working one-on-one with the coach, the owner of the company, we established that, yes, in fact, I had real issues having epilepsy. And it had really affected me. I'd allowed it to affect me. And we established that really what I wanted to do in life was to give back and help others and, become a coach for women with epilepsy. Again, it overcome the turned into the victor over the victim and moved into the I'm a woman who lives with fear of epilepsy. Now, having said that, over the last 3, 4, 5 years, I guess, I looked a little further into, did I have epilepsy or didn't I? Because it was a little bit confusing. And apparently it's dormant, remission, or hidden, but I guess I've always had it. So what I did is through working with coaches and taking courses, I built a business. I became a licensed facilitator, certified coach, and basically spent the last quite a few years putting together the resources that weren't out there for me when I had it and I was in the heart of the epilepsy. There just wasn't anything out there for you. So lucky enough, I worked with coaches and took a lot of courses, studied a lot, and built a business. And I live every day now with, I'm a woman who lives with the fear of epilepsy. If they're telling me all the things I can't do, what about all the things I can do? And going with the victor instead of the victim mode, because I'll tell you, I sunk into that victim negative state for many, many years, going, why me, poor me, why is this happening, what's going on? Life is a lot easier if you go for the positive over the negative, and you know, turn things around, find a solution to the problem, you know, get coaching or, you know, take courses and study. And funnily enough, I zip through studying now, whereas I struggled so much in school. You know, it's just crazy. Now Yvonne, you know, I'm like, oh, another course, you know, and so I love studying, taking courses and finding resources and giving back and helping out, because again, there was not resources around when I got epilepsy, because we're talking 40 something years ago. Yeah. And I can't tell you the amount of money, time, effort I spent searching, researching, going to specialists. And you know what? And no blame here. Nobody knew what to do with me. They didn't know.
I hear you. I hear you in that, Liz. And I hear you because, as you and I have already talked about, and some of the listeners may know, I also have a special needs son who also has epilepsy. And so this piece that you just shared about, you know, I wasn't doing very well in school, and then I started having seizures, and all of a sudden I was doing well again. That is exactly the same thing that happens with my son. After he has a grand mal seizure, which at the time is not great, and he is on medication, so it does eliminate quite a few of them. However, when they happen, it seems like afterwards he kind of has this development burst where he starts to do things that he wasn't doing before, he wasn't even interested in before. And it's kind of like it accelerates his learning to the point at one time where my now ex-husband, his dad, when we were saying, you know, should we take him off the medication? Should we just let him keep having seizures and then let him kickstart his development? Because, you know, it seems like it's not that necessarily a bad thing. And yet for him, obviously, the whole experience of having the seizure is, you know, quite traumatic, especially if we're, you know, out at a restaurant, not right now, obviously, with COVID. But if you're in somewhere public and all of a sudden he just keels over and is on the floor and, you know, not, you know, and is in full grand seizure, shaking every limb in his body, other people don't know what to do and they freak out and then it makes it worse. So I appreciate you sharing that it wasn't just him who's going through that. You experienced that too. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and the other thing that was interesting, I mean, because I still have it, like it's in remission or hidden or dormant, whatever, and I still know that it's there, but I choose to live, you know, without the fear of it as much as possible. But I was going to mention, it's funny because people, not funny, but when people witnessed my seizures, they were full on the worst of the worst grand mals. And it was terrifying for them and very traumatic. And it's horrible to watch from what I hear. But from my side of it, what I want to offer out to others, and, you know, maybe others feel the same way. When I was going to have a seizure, usually I was overtired, very stressed, had been burning the candle at both ends, trying to do too much, trying to be something because I had it. And but, you know, the interesting thing I was sharing with someone the other day is that after the seizure, you know, you're confused, or I was confused. And it was like, okay, where am I? What am I doing? You know, and you feel kind of, you know, you're off your game, so to speak. And then for me, I'd be very, very tired. Yeah. So I would lie down and have a nap. But here's the strange thing for me is that I would come out of the nap. And yes, I was a little tired and fuzzy. But it was like a reset. So it was like, yes, my body had this buildup and this massive explosion. And it was like turning the light switch on and off for me, where after the seizure, you know, you'd go to sleep that night and you wake up the next day. I was just like full of life and felt refreshed. And it was like a restart. You know, like I say, turning the light bulb or turning the light on and off. And then after, I'd be like, woohoo, you know, and then take off and go, 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 go. And then eventually I learned, okay, wait a sec. These are all what's happening. This is the pattern. And this is what, you know, I could perhaps change. And I did. And it did help a bit. So, but it was refreshing, I guess. Not refreshing. For me, I felt better after the seizure.
Kind of rejuvenating by the sound of it.
Yeah, and it's funny because you push out so much strength and energy, and it's like you exhaust your body. So I actually felt good after them. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but I felt good and I felt refreshed and ready to go out and try to prove to the world that I could be something, which is not how I feel anymore.
Well, it's interesting because with Alex, because of his other developmental delays, he's never really been able to articulate what he's feeling at the time. So in his case, it's febrile seizures. So it's brought on by him overheating. So we have to, you know, make sure that we pay attention. He doesn't have too many blankets on, or he's got his hat off when he's sitting in the car, or he just, you know, we don't have the heat to turned up too much. If he's doing strenuous exercise, at one point he was doing special needs basketball and bowling. And if he got overheated doing that, that would be a trigger. So for him, he wasn't really able to explain that he knew it was coming on or how it felt. So I don't know if you have the cognition during the event to be able to describe anything before or during. You talked about the after piece, which is similar to with Alex as well, but
for me, I used to, and, you know, when I think back, there was warning signs. Like I would get all of a sudden a flurry of like you were clicking in and out, you know, it would be like a kind of clicking in and out. And you thought, oh, okay, something's, you know, here we go. And then boom, it would happen. So it was like a little bit of an aura, I guess, for me. And generally, again, a lot of them were on Saturday and Sunday mornings between 9 and 10. I've come to know that dehydration was a big thing. Partying, burning the candle at both ends, going to school, working, you know, trying to be everything we wanted to be, you know, in 20, 30 and 40 years old. And so this started to establish patterns. But the aura before would be like mini petite malts, I guess, you know, little flickerings and like, uh-oh. And then before you even went, uh-oh, boom, there you went. And I was down. And, you know, a couple of times I hit my head so hard that, you know, I split my skull open or I seemed to hit myself down this side here. Yeah, but the, you know what, the when you're going down, I remember the crack. Like the crack and the smell, and that's all I remember. And next thing you know, I'm in the ambulance going, okay, what's going on, right? So, you know, and the rest of the time I didn't call an ambulance, I would eventually come through and wake up and see all these people going, are you okay? Yeah. And I feel great, but where am I? And who are you? Or, you know, or what's going on? Or, yeah, so there were sometimes signs. But, you know, the one interesting thing about it is I became really in tune with my body over the years. And people, if we had plans to go out, I'd have to say last minute, I can't go. Yeah. It's too risky. I can't go. And now I know if I'm tired, I take a nap. And, you know, there's lots of signs where if I start to get too wired and too hyper and all of a sudden they go, you know what, it's time to slow down, you know, and just sort of learn to chill. And in all of that, I really, you know, like to go for the positive versus the negative and what I can do, what I can't do and live in purpose and, you know, supporting others and learning and growing and not fall back into the, well, you know, I probably could have collected disability all my life and done nothing. I just chose for me because I knew I could plow through it or I thought I could plow through it. And that's what I chose to do. So living without fear, what I can do, what I can't do and, just continue on that way. And I was told a lot of things I couldn't do and being a little bit of a rebel, I would do things that I was told I shouldn't do, which in hindsight was, you know, they said, okay, Liz, no rock climbing. Well, not that I really ever wanted to rock climb, but I worked for a company and we were on a rock climbing expedition and I rappelled off the side of a cliff over the ocean. Should I have done it? No. I would have landed in the water. Was it irresponsible? Yeah. You know, like parasailing, you know, and getting stuck in a little bit of a storm parasailing. Well, I wasn't going to stop living. Everybody most of the time knew that I had a history of it, but they knew I was on medication. And that's when I just thought, you know, why did you have to be such a rebel? It was fine. But in hindsight, I wouldn't recommend, you know, parasailing. Your jet skiing in infested waters in Mexico with epilepsy. It's probably just not a, you know, good thing to recommend to anybody, right? You know, a little bit of stress happening there, and oh, there's sharks. Okay, hey, there's a storm.
But no, I'm laughing with you, Liz, because you know, I think about some of the things that my son wants to do. And it's funny how, you know, I'm more of, you know, I was always the adventurous kid growing up, climbing the highest tree, swinging off the highest monkey bars, whatever. Whereas my ex is very much more traditional and very much about minimizing risk and safety, safety, safety. And we've had some really interesting conversations with Alex about, you know, as parents now, you know, not being together around age six, we split up, you know, how I look and I say, what's the maximum that he can do? And he looks and says, what's the safest thing he can do? And so he's always trying to minimize what he can do. And I'm always trying to open it up. Things like riding a bike, though, for him, because he has an imbalance in the size of ventricle left and right, it's like having water in your ears after you've been swimming and your head is kind of fuzzy and you don't have your balance. It's like that for him all the time. So for riding a bike, he just doesn't have the balance to be able to do it. And by the time he was old enough to try doing it, it was a bit old for being on a tricycle, right? But realistically, a bike with stabilizers, they just don't make them. They don't make them sturdy enough and big enough with stabilizers for someone who's 15, because most kids are like riding a bike without stabilizers by, I don't know, 7, 8. So I'm sure that you experienced as well a lot of things where you had to customize the way that you did things. You had to be adaptable and resilient. And I love the fact that you've customized some content specifically for women and specifically for women so that they can stay, you know, in motion, which is, of course, part of your branding, and not be held back by epilepsy. Because living in fear isn't fun for anybody. And I think that, you know, going through COVID, everybody has had a world of upset. And it's now a great time for this interview to really put the spotlight on, you know what, you might think that your life has been challenging over the past few weeks because you've been homeschooling or whatever's changed in your world. Have a listen to what's been happening in Liz's life and see what she's been going through and how she's developed this exceedingly strong personality in and looking at life with resilience instead of, as you say, being a victim. So what are some of the other learnings along the way?
Yeah, the one of the things, and I've not really talked a lot about it over the years, is that constant battle with depression, constant battle with anxiety. But, you know, as you know, I'm a little bit of a rebel and I don't want to take pharmaceuticals any longer. I stopped taking them years and years and years ago for the epilepsy, but I had to take other pharmaceuticals because, oh my gosh, there was, you know, autoimmune became something that I inherited with the epilepsy. I don't know if they're correlated, but I got that. And then anxiety and depression, they've been constant battles, but I chose that I didn't want to be on anything to help with the anxiety or depression anymore. So I don't know if I should actually publicly say it, but I made the choice to go off antidepressants and anxiety medication in January of this year during COVID. But I was taking the medication thinking it was slowing down my nervous system. Anyway, long story short, it's used a lot for anxiety and depression. Mine, I thought, was slowing down the nervous system. But I thought, you know, mind over matter, work through it. So I went off the anxiety depression medication that I thought was for something else anyway, because it turned out the side effect of it was seizures, which I didn't know. So anyway, who knows what's going on there. And I just thought, you know, I'm going to go off this because it's not helping with my nervous system. It could cause a seizure. I can work through the depression, anxiety. It takes work, obviously, but I do self-coaching or self-hypnosis and I journal and I find ways to deal with the anxiety and the depression, which quite honestly, I've battled all my life, right? So, and it just shows, let's look at ways that you can handle depression or anxiety. And just, you know, look at the mindset and just switch that from victim to victor, fear to no fear, you know, what I can do versus what I can't do, because switching the mindset and looking into the possibilities or the solutions has just been so brilliant. And if I start to feel sorry for myself in any way, I go, oh, get over yourself.
What are some of the things, other than maybe, you know, wearing an elastic band and pinging yourself all the time, what are some of the strategies that you've, you know, two or three things that you've learned that you can do very quickly and easily to turn yourself around? If you start going down a rabbit hole and feeling like a victim, what do yeah. you do to turn things around?
You know, right away, I clue into it within a couple seconds and I go, stop. What is really going on? And then I go into, okay, so stop. What is really going on? Why are you feeling this way? And then I don't know who I learned this from recently, but it was going down the why. So, okay, stop. Why are you feeling this way? And, you know, go into that. So why am I feeling this way? Well, you know, okay, so why are you feeling that way? Well, you know, because you're doing a little bit of self-talk or self-coaching or whatever word you want to put to it. And I can try to get to the very, very, very bottom. And a lot of times it's like, I'm tired. I need a nap. Or, you know, it's just a matter of stopping that, what would be the word for it? Just stopping the thought, analyzing, looking at it and thinking, why are you feeling this way? Okay, why are you feeling that way? Why are you feeling this way? What's really going on? And a lot of times I just kind of chuckle at myself and go, you just fell right into the victim instead of the victor, or the what I can't do versus what I can do. So it's being in check with yourself, I guess, and going, hey, wait a second, this is the way I live. And this is my thought process moving forward. Why am I allowing myself to get back? Why? And honestly, in a lot of cases for me, I might just, like I say, be tired and I'll have a quick nap and snap out of it. But what I do find is that letting myself, I don't want to fall into the victim mode or the depressed or sad mode, because that's not serving me. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of work to do out there in the world, you know, and by allowing that to happen, like I say, it's not serving me. It's not serving other people. And it's just as easy to look at the positive as the negative. Look for the solution, not the problem. Be the victor, not the victim. And look what you can do, what you can't do. So
love it. Yeah. Love it. I mean, yeah. This whole question of why, there's also some work that is by a guy called Michael Brown called the Presence Process. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
No.
It's basically a 90-day program in a book. He didn't want to dilute it by turning it into workshops. So it's only in the book, and you need to be completely clean when you're doing it, as in no supports of any kind, drugs, alcohol, whatever. And so you're very present because you're very aware, because there's no supports that are creating any kind of fuzziness or blindness. And you go through a number of steps. You have a series of readings and you do them every week. But what you're asking yourself is, when a situation comes up, is to bear witness to it and step into observing what's happening versus getting too caught up in the feeling of it. And then also, when you are in the middle of it, instead of trying to analyze it right then and there, just to feel into the energy, because he believes that unintegrated energy is what causes these clashes and the emotions to rise. So when you sit with the energy and just let it dissipate, and then afterwards say, what was going on right before this situation happened? And then you analyze the situation and how you responded to it, then you can almost see it coming the next time. And you can say, oh, there's that situation again. I'm going to handle it differently this time.
And the other thing, too,
and that was a very powerful reading.
One of my friends who's one of my personal coaches was, and she would talk about the thought model a lot. And I followed that, too. I think that's kind of from Byron Katie, or is it Brooke Castile? I'm not really sure where that came from, but the thought model. So I use the thought model sometimes too, and then journal. But right in the heat of it and right in the moment when I'm getting hyper and wound up and this, you know, these bad thoughts or negative thoughts are coming in, that's all I'll do with the self-coaching or the find out why. But the thought model is great too. And what you suggested is amazing and well as well. And then you're right, just to find out what's going on. Why are you, you know, doing this? It's quite interesting. It's a really good process. So, and you definitely learn a lot about yourself and your, you know, things you want to work on or, you know, change by going through all these processes. It's, oh my gosh, I used to get myself all right down into it.
I think that the reason that coaches, like great coaches, the reason they are great is personally, I think, because they've, you know, certainly because they've lived a number of years and years of experiences. However, I think it's more important that they've done their own deeper work. I mean, somebody asked me the other day, you know, how much have you spent on different coaching and transformational programs? And I added it up and it was well over $100,000 of personal development. You probably too. And some of the world's greatest teachers, you know, for you, I know that you did some stuff with Tony Robbins. For me, it was, you know, Jack Canfield, Susie Carter, Jane Warlow, you know, transformational thought leaders. And so a lot of those nuggets of wisdom, I think I had 125 references in my book. A lot of the work that went into my best-selling book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, was pulling together all of these various insights with interviews from inspirational and confident women that I had interviewed, as well as my own experiences and tips that I kept sharing with my clients that kept working over and over. And it's like, it's time to get this out to a broader audience. You know, don't use the word but in the middle of the sentence, because it just cuts it in half and it diminishes whatever you said afterwards. You know, people only hear half the sentence. Stop apologizing as women. Don't keep saying sorry all the time. You know, things like that, which contribute to our power.
Interesting. It's, I studied under three or four phenomenal women. Crystal Andrus Morissette, she was, you know, the coach who helped me establish. I did have issues with epilepsy, and that I want to give back and, you know, coach other women. So that was amazing to work. I actually went to work for that company and got coaching, and, you know, Crystal Andrus Morissette, just amazing. And there's some women in Calgary as well that were, you know, I had a huge amount of aha moments with coaching with them. And then with the Robbins Mendez and a couple other programs that I'm with you. I think I'm up over the 100,000 somewhere for programs and coaching and building a business and personal development. I don't think it'll ever stop. I mean,
well, that's how we grow, right? We do our own work. We share it. We do our own work. We share it, whatever that might be. So yeah, even for last year, you know, last summer, I had come across the bank personality science system, and I fell in love right away with what I could do with that, because it's all about communications and having more effective communications. And it integrated so nicely with my confident conversations work that I said, well, I don't, you know, it's been 10 years since I took my executive coach certification. I need something new and fresh, which is going to help my clients and business owners get out of the issues of COVID. We need something that's going to bring in more sales, like a lot more sales. And so after I started working with that, 2 weeks in, I'm already up $10,000. And, you know, that's not a huge amount. And yet it's still within 2 weeks, I think, speaks to what I've been able to do with it. And it's just now continuing to build and build. So that's kind of an exciting thing.
Yeah, and you know, everybody, Yvonne introduced me to the bank, the Code Breaker, and I'm just fascinated by it. So you got to reach out to her. It's, I got my code and I went, okay, that's interesting. And
people, it is really interesting. So if you're listening and you want to find out a little bit more about it, what I would ask you to do is to get your phone out quickly and to text me. And I'll give you the number to text me. You can text the word CODE, C-O-D-E, just like what you're actually going to do is crack your personality code. So C-O-D-E. and you can text that to 403-668-9279. So that's code, text the word code, C-O-D-E, to 403-668-9279. And I'll repeat that at the end as well. So, that'll give you a chance to get your own complimentary report. It's a 20-plus page report that will tell you all about your preferred communication style. So it's really interesting. And it'll probably have a little bit of a trigger for, whoa, I wonder what I could do with this in my relationships and in my business. So happy to talk a little bit more about that as well. It's However, amazing. This is an interview about Liz. So back to Liz.
I love that. Yeah. It's just constant learning and like you say, the bank, that's fascinating. And of course now I'm studying that right now because I just think that's super, super cool. And it's always about learning and, you know, growing and I think I'll be a lifelong learner. You know, I don't know if that's because as a kid, I had so much trouble. And now I'm making up for lost time where I want to read and learn everything. And it's not such a bad thing, right? So,
I think we're like plants, Liz. We're either growing or dying. And I don't think that there's much in between. When I think about, you know, my day today, I thought it was going to be a very quiet day and it ended up being back to back to back inquiries. And I still have not gone through all my email yet. So there were some new things I learned and some great relationships that have been forming today as well. So you never know what you're going to get. Every day is different. And what is it that they said in that, that famous movie, every day is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get, right? So you talked a little bit about autoimmune as well, and then talking about, you know, learning disabilities, talking about your epilepsy. So tell me about how this is all coming together and what's special and unique about this coaching program that you have developed for women with epilepsy. What's unique about that?
So what I decided to do was I wanted to have a niche market where I specialized in coaching women with epilepsy because I totally get it. I totally, totally, totally get it. So what I did is I went out and I researched a couple of coaching companies and I've gotten certified through Robbins Mendez. And what I like about that is I went and did level one, level two and got certified through Strategic Intervention Activation Method Group Coaching, which is a coaching institute. And what I love about it is that I follow their program as a certified coach and licensed facilitator. It's like a 27 topic process that you can mix and match depending on the person. So there's these different topics and they, oh my gosh, I run them every week. And so it'll take you through a process. They use sort of a 9-stage coaching process in each class. And that gives me the ability to mix and match or personalize or put together classes for an individual person. Or group coaching is really cool because it's not recorded. And it's a group of 20 women with epilepsy, and you can go through the 4 weeks, you can continue 8 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever you want. And it's a group of people that are coming together, for example, for 4 weeks, and you get to know each other. But the communication starts in there, the conversations, listening, and you get this whole community of people that all have epilepsy that can relate to each other going through the process together. And that's what I love about it.
I love that. Because when I think about, you know, my experience obviously has been in terms of being around people with epilepsy has been my son. So when my son is at his dad's, it's almost like, oh, and I can breathe, right? Because I'm not on call immediately for something happening. Is, you know, if he has a seizure, usually his seizures subside by themselves. So his dad will phone me and say, you know, Alex just had a seizure. Here's what happened. But it's after the fact. Whereas for you, you're living with this constantly. So I imagine that there are some great teachings and conversation and exercises that the women would be able to collectively have because they've all experienced this in some way, shape, or form, or maybe still are experiencing it. You don't want women living in fear, right?
Yeah, and it's, and part of the course is the reason I like the activation method group coaching, which can be done one-on-one or in a group, is that, like I say, they have 9 stages in the coaching process. People become very relaxed and very comfortable, and within the community, they know it's not being recorded, everything's confidential, and these people that are like-minded, so to speak, can come together, and it's really reassuring, and they feel like they're part of a community, and we have private groups for them, and ongoing support, and so much more. It's just a highly, in my opinion, highly effective way of providing coaching at, you know, it's a great price, you got a group of people, and you really have a good, strong community, and you know, lots of friendships develop and continue on from there. And I'm always evolving and introducing new things and finding new things to make more and more resources available for the women with epilepsy. I am opening it up to everybody. In 2022, I will be doing coaching for couples, men, teachers, anybody. Like, really, the activation method group coaching process can be with anybody.
Excellent. So for right now, I think you have a class that is coming up, which is specifically, again, for women with epilepsy. So how can people find out about it?
Running it, it's actually, I'm a licensed facilitator as well for Daniel Laporte, and it's called the Free and Clear, and it's free. It's a 6-week process that is different yet similar. Again, it's called Free and Clear, and I'm offering it free. You will see it priced up there at $199. This is a free class, and I'll be running it at 12 o'clock for women with epilepsy, and then a general one at 3 o'clock on May 1st. And if you'd like to reach out to me through my website at liznichols.com, so www.liznichols.com, send me a message through there and I can get you the link and some more information. But really, we'll meet once a week for 6 weeks on Saturday. It is Daniel Laporte's work, and like I say, I'm a licensed facilitator for her. And I'll take you through that. And the reason I like this one to start off with is that, first of all, it's free. But what it helps you look at is your past and your future. And it sort of helps you get clear of what's not serving you. Mm. And it helps you become clear on the direction you want. So it's a very lighthearted, kind of light, fun, interesting way to perhaps ease into coaching. And it's just very, you know, like what doesn't serve you and what you want. And it's a really, really fun process. Now, both are highly effective. It just depends on the person's needs or wants.
Absolutely. Well, I'm happy to share that information. And, you know, I'm sure that there are some people listening and they're going, well, wait a minute, Yvonne is a coach. Why would you be promoting another coach's stuff? Well, because I live in a world of abundance, and I look and I say, you know, what's my specialty and my expertise, which is around language, confident conversations, helping women business entrepreneurs who have a mission-inspired business to flourish. It's very different than coaching specifically with Liz's expertise and her programming. And I've been living on the fringes of epilepsy, but I don't have the same deep wisdom that Liz has to share. And yet I understand what a really important topic this is, because as Liz said, you know, she's looked for like years and years and years, and here's the challenges she's experienced with getting resources. I too experienced challenges tracking down resources for my son. You know, which is the best school system for him? Where's he gonna go? I mean, most kids who are 12 and up, you don't have to worry about them for daycare. You don't have to worry about an after-school program for them once they turn 12 or 13. Because 13, they're legally in Canada able to stay home by themselves. I couldn't do that with my child. So trying to find an alternative arrangement for where's he going to go after school if I want to work, you know, it just complicates things. And those are things that, as women, We take on the majority of the family household tasks. We take on still the majority of the child rearing responsibilities. And so a lot of these things fall on us. And even though I don't have elderly parents to manage that piece, as well as, you know, the young special needs piece, I was blessed when I inherited my other kids. When I remarried, they were already 15, 17, and 19, and Alex was 11. So I could really still focus my energy quite a bit on what his needs were. So I'm so grateful, Liz, that you are putting these additional components together to customize and really prepare women to have more, they're having more confident lifestyles. And yet it's more about understanding how to live with this, you called it a disease, live with this.
Now, they've changed one of the definitions, and it was used to be a condition or a disease or lots of different things, but
You refer to it as a disease still, or?
I used to always say condition.
Condition.
But I was reading somewhere lately, and they were talking about it's actually now been classified as a disease. So either or, it's, people don't talk about it. And I'm a little bit of a rebel, and I choose to talk about it and share about it and put out resources and coach, you know, women with epilepsy. And that's, you can't not talk about things. And it's interesting how many people have it, or how many people have it in their family. Mm-hmm. Family history. Like, pretty much, I think maybe 70% of the people I talk to, either they know somebody, family, spouse, children, somebody in their family. And it's interesting, I chose to talk about it and find the resources and provide the resources, and which is sort of, outside the box for what most people will do.
But again, thank you for doing that, Liz. It's very valuable work. It's very meaningful work. And certainly when I think about, this whole concept of coaches, and I have several clients who are coaches, and watching them evolve and flourish in business, a lot of that is getting their niche really defined. And you can speak to that wholeheartedly from the inside out, because you've lived and breathed it, much as I can speak about startups. Right. I can also speak about, what it's like to be the mom of a special needs child, because I've lived and breathed that. And as soon as I mention that, I find that I'm attracting more people, because when you're willing to talk about something, all of a sudden it gives everybody else permission to put their hand up and say, oh, that's me too. Or, oh, there's someone I can actually talk to comfortably about it. So thank you for doing this great work, Liz. I know that you have just gotten started some of these new programs. I know that you're going to be making a massive impact. So I encourage you to reach out to Liz through Liz Nichols, NICHOLLS.com. Learn more about that program if it sounds intriguing. And I am in a moment going to share a little bit more about the best-selling book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations as well. And thank you, Liz, for sharing me my stage today on the Words, Women, and Wisdom show.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. I'm really grateful to be able to talk about it and share this out to the world. And I really appreciate you and everything you do. And I'm so glad we're connected. And I just, oh, my gosh, you're amazing. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Liz, for today, for sharing. And this is important information. We need to get it out to the world. And have a great evening, okay?
You
too. Bye for now.
Bye.
Ladies, a new book is on the horizon. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. This new book is for women ready to rediscover their inner confidence, take a stand for themselves in life and business by using more powerful language. Words are so powerful and already changed history. On October 5th, the New York Times published a story detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment against film producer Harvey Weinstein. And numerous women in the entertainment industry found the courage to go public, banding together with a powerful voice that change is long overdue. Even Oprah Winfrey, television network icon, gave a rousing speech at the Golden Globe Awards in January. The media has showcased the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. The Me Too movement is flourishing and all signaling it's time for women's equality and change. I believe it's time to give women the verbal agility to create more confident conversations. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations is the book which provides practical approaches for women to ask for what we really want and receive our request.
Hello, I'm Yvonne Silver, certified executive coach and senior HR professional, seasoned in business. I teach women to flourish in business by using more confident language to help empower and engage others. This book is the result of over 35 years of my career, professional career, working in four different countries. I've interviewed over 6,000 people in my career for job interviews, executive coaching, for sales and consulting conversations. And I've listened to hundreds of women in particular who are looking for a better way to collaborate. They're looking to be asking for what they really want and heard and validated, especially in business. And women often earn less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's 2018. It's time for change.
The Modern Art of Confident Conversations explores words we use at home, at work, words that trip us up, elevate us, and encourage us, and when no words are even required. It is about how to leverage the power of words in a positive, in a collaborative and impactful way. Now I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are empowering other women and leading through mentorship programs and my coaching, public speaking, interviews, and writing. I'm passionate about women's equality. Why? I grew up in England in a house with a flow of negative comments from my father, which destroyed my mum's dignity until she became an empty shell of the vibrant woman she'd once been, belittled by constant criticism and questioning of her abilities. Through my own life journey and supporting hundreds of female clients, I've discovered critical words to ask to get what we really want collaboratively. I know there are critical links between our language, our behavior, our mindset, and our success in life. Words from a song can replay in our head for hours, and poetry can bring a lump in our throats. I've combined my insights with interviews from influential women, sharing their pearls of wisdom, supplemented with research and reference studies from established scholars. Women are rising up. It's time for women to be heard. Let's use more powerful, positive language and join the rising tide of change. This book is for you. A woman looking to the future, ready to embrace significant positive changes in your life by using more confident language. Eliminate those words that drain your power, add words that energize and invigorate, and shift from ordinary to extraordinary. Just one word can change your life. I believe every woman needs their own copy of this powerful book. It's time for action and time for change. Order and reserve your own copy of Words, Women, and Wisdom today.